Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook, or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Susie with us. Susie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Leticia. Thanks for having me. I'm Susie Butts. I'm a psychotherapist in Australia, and I'm a somatic psychotherapist because I work with the neuroscience that says stress and trauma are held in our bodies, and it doesn't have to stay there.
I love it. I am a new neuroscience student. So anything neuroscience-based, science-based, I do tend to want more information simply because, you know, that's the foundation from which we operate in this space. So welcome. Let's start right off. How would you describe survival mode?
All right. So I'm going to come from what I explain to all my clients. If you think about it, we've come out of thousands of years of survival. Kings didn't get to be kings because they were nice people. They were traumatized themselves and they inflicted it on everybody else. So we all learned not to rock the boat, not to put our head up too high, just to survive. And our life expectancy was a lot shorter. Okay, even in the 1970s, here in Australia, the average life expectancy for men was 40 to 50 years old and women 50 to 60 years old. Britain would have been very similar, the US similar. So all your first world countries are roughly similar. There's a few years of difference. But we all learned. And we also, if someone couldn't survive, we'd shun them because they could bring us all down. So we've all learned to survive. And it's only now, really, since the end of World War II, when we discovered penicillin and we stopped sending all our boys off to all the big wars. Well, mostly we don't. And we've introduced occupational health and safety. We've introduced so many changes and we've nearly doubled the life expectancy. So in the old days, if you were suffering the effects of surviving, you were going to die soon anyway, and who cares? You know, it's like, really, it was just a matter of you just not got to survive and bring your children up, and that's it. Don't whinge about it. So I like to use a little visualization for people to understand the basics behind the neuroscience of stress and trauma. So I do a little visualization with a beach, and most people are comfortable with a beach, and it's a beach that's perfect for you. So just use your imagination and imagine the most perfect beach for you that's totally safe. Down one end of the beach, the waves lap gently on the shore. And when we're down this end of our beach, we eat appropriately, we sleep well, we float in the waters of life, and we feel refreshed and energized. Up the other end of the beach, the big waves, the surf, the breakers, and when we're up this end of our beach, we feel passionate and alive. And when we dive into the waters of life, we can be adventurous and social and all sorts of amazing things. And we're meant to flow from one end of the beach to the other, where we can access all of our amazing human capabilities. So I can use all my cognitive capacities and it's available to me. I can set goals and make plans and I've got the energy to achieve them. I can be present with myself, with others, with my environment. I can express and feel my emotions appropriately and everything else that we put in. So I basically say we relate really well to ourselves, to others, and to our environment. But like any beach, the weather can change. So up the back of the beach is a tall rock cliff. And the first time the weather changes, we go up there and there's a broad rock platform, about chest height, and we activate whatever resources we need to get up onto that rock shelf. The beach is only just down there. And then we activate whatever resources we need to deal with what's being thrown at us. When that weather event's over, we're meant to come back down onto our beach and go and sit out or in some rock pools that are sort of in the middle of the beach, finish releasing all those resources we activated, and have the capacity to reflect on our experience and the experience of others. And every time we do that, go up onto that rock shelf and come back down, we learn and we heal and we grow. So stress is important for us because we're meant to do this. However, having come out of thousands of years of survival, our parents didn't know how to get down off that cliff face, and they weren't able to teach us. Some rare parents might have been able to help their children learn that. The majority of us certainly didn't learn that. So instead, we stayed on that rock shelf. So when the next weather event came along, we climbed up to the next rock shelf, which wasn't quite as wide or quite as comfortable. And we kept repeating that process till we were about a third of the way up the cliff. And then we were noticing how uncomfortable we felt, and the beach is down there, and all I'm feeling is all this anxiety, and I'm not communicating effectively, and life's not doing really well. And it's the first time I noticed there's a little tunnel that leads off to what's initially a flat, featureless plain. And when I go out there, I feel fine, frozen, inert, numb, emotionless. But it's better than what I was feeling out on the plain, out on the cliff face. So now I go out there, but I really want to get back down to that beach. So I come out onto the cliff face and here comes some more stuff coming at me. And I keep going up. Now I'm going out there and back. And because that plane is a bit boring, we start to fill it with poor mirror images of what we genuinely had on the beach. So it might be substances. It might be behaviors. It might be activities. It might be all sorts of things. And out there, they're all on a sliding scale. So up this end, done with awareness, they're perfectly healthy and fine in small bursts, but we pay a price. Down the other, in the middle, our nervous system pops us into there before we're aware of it. Down the other end, it can destroy me and my life. So it doesn't matter whether it's alcohol, carbohydrates, a common one that we go and we do that, screen time, busyness, all sorts of things that we do to keep ourselves up from being aware of how overwhelmed we are. Eventually, we can end up so high on that cliff face that we're hanging on by our fingers and toes, and it feels like any breath of air could blow us off. And other days we think, it's just not worth it. I might just let go. And it's really horrible. And the majority of us are living quite high up our cliff face. So I often say it's like we've got a reserve tank for all those stress resources. When we're young, they're down here and we've got this much resilience. But over time, because we've been climbing that cliff face and we haven't been doing what we needed, by the time we're 40, all of us are up to here. And it doesn't take much to overwhelm us. We're all living survival mode. And sometimes it can be really awful survival mode. The good news is neuroscience has shown us if we complete our body-based stress process, we can come back down safely and easily and genuinely get back down to our beach. We will always go up onto the cliff face from time to time, but we can come back down. So that's the model I work with. And I ping myself all the time. Oh, out on the cliff face today, are we? You know, that sort of thing. But I didn't know all of that before I retrained.
Awareness, which we'll talk about later, is key. 100%. And one of the reasons why I started this podcast is because there is such a lack of awareness. I used to say it was rooted in ignorance, but it just is. We don't talk about this stuff enough, right? So it's harder to make changes with things that we aren't aware of. I like to say we can't change what we can't see. So I love that description of survival mode. And now I'm curious to hear your story to and through survival mode.
Okay. So I grew up with two brothers and parents who were, I've always described them as loving and kind. But we didn't know how much background trauma my mum came from. And so she was emotionally totally unavailable. So I was one of those needy kids who always, yeah, whatever I can do to be make it right and to be, can you give me more love? Can you give me more attention? And yeah, so that was, so I call it a dysfunctional family because we most of us come from dysfunctional families. And it's usually because of some level of background trauma. And the fact that trauma comes down through generations, it'll come down in parenting style, and it also comes down through our DNA. Epigenetics is showing how trauma that we have no idea about, we can replay it in our nervous system. So yeah, so if you'd asked me when I was younger, I would have said, oh no, I had a good childhood. We had a lot nice time. But looking back now, I can see that set the platform for all my future decisions that weren't so great. So I had a car accident, and it was the first time in my life. I was about 18, driving. My seatbelt that mum and dad had fitted to my old 1958 Peugeot was twisted under the seat, and I was going over to my boyfriend's to get him to unwrap it, and this car just came out of nowhere, and I hit them at 80 kilometers an hour. And as they turned up in front of me and I'm hitting the brakes, I thought, I could die here. And I blacked out before the moment of impact. And I just end up with broken ribs and smashed teeth and all sorts of things. So I was lucky that old 58 Peugeot saved me. I then went on to marry my first boyfriend because, and it's only as I was preparing for this that I thought about it, because mum disowned me because I wouldn't do what she said. So that was my first insight into maybe mum doesn't know everything. Maybe this isn't the right way to go about things. But I married him. He was violent because, again, mum was a strong person. And I love her to death, but she was hard work. And so she would also attack my dad, not physically, but emotionally, all the time. It was his fault and his family's fault for how she felt. And so I knew I have a strong personality as well. So I thought, I don't ever want to be my mother in a relationship. So I married a man who was violent, because that'll make it all right, won't it? No. So yeah, by the time I'd had a few broken bones and things like that, we divorced, which was good. But it did leave me with an emptiness inside. And I'd retrained because mum had thought I'd make a really good secretary. I am the least nurturing, caring person you can ever come across. And I do pity the poor man I was secretary for a few years. But I retrained into IT, which was more my style because I could live in my head and I didn't have to feel things and I could just be purely logical. By the time I got into my early 40s, I existed up here somewhere and this body was just something that carried me around and I had put on an awful lot of weight. I grew up skinny, okay, because I have small bone structure like mum, but I ended up at the end of working in IT. So by the time I was in my 40s, I was 110 to 120 kilos. And yeah, so I just blamed myself. I'd do all these diets and things and I'd get some weight off. But as soon as I wasn't paying attention, it would come back on with a vengeance. And if every time we did a major system implementation, whack, he'd come a few more kilos, whether I wanted it or not. Now I know obesity and that sort of weight gain is directly trauma related. You know, you've heard of the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, and some of the outcomes from early childhood want is all sorts of things, including obesity. So that was one of my key identifiers of when I finally started to realize what was going on. So I was 42 when 9/11 happened. And I was running my own small IT consultancy and I had to go to Sydney. I was living 2 hours out of Sydney and I had to go to Sydney to negotiate a contract. The night before, I'd done all my preparation and I walked out to go and put the bins out and the TV was on. And the announcer was saying, a plane has flown into one of the Twin Towers. I'm going, what are the Twin Towers? Didn't even know what they were. Pardon me. By the time I came back from putting the bins out, because there was no visual to start with, it was a clear sky. And I'm looking at it going, well, I thought it must have been foggy for a plane to have hit a big building like that. And as I stood there watching, the second plane flew into the second tower. And I went, nope, I've got to survive here. I've got to go to bed because I've got to get up early and I've got to drive into Sydney. So that was pure survival mode. And I was totally ignoring how I felt and the huge impact of what was going on. The next morning, I'm driving in and the radio's on and they were talking about people jumping out of the towers and then they started to collapse. And I'm bawling as I'm driving into Sydney. And I'm looking at every car around me and every single person was crying. Because every one of us on that road that morning were ignoring our own emotions and just in survival mode. I've got to go to work or I've got to go and do this and I've got to. We didn't get that contract. But I did remember thinking, what on earth am I doing this for? And so that then led me to retrain into psychotherapy because I wanted to come more from my heart. So to me, that was a big turning point. And the whole time I worked in IT, I saw the amount of stress and trauma and what it does to people. And it horrified me. But if you'd asked me 4 years before or told me I was going to specialize in stress and trauma, I would have gone, I don't think so. If I'm going back to full-time study, I'll go and do architecture. Thank you very much. No, but I was just called towards it. And I look back now and I go, every experience, the level of stress and traumas that I've had have all given me insights and awareness and a felt sense of what these things do to us. Does that help?
Yes. I mean, you mentioned so many important points, particularly around how when we don't deal with our emotions that immediately almost puts us in survival mode every time because the body is beautiful at compartmentalizing and mm-hmm. allowing us to pack things away. And while it helps us in that moment, perhaps to go on with our day, eventually it's like sweeping dust under a rug, right? Eventually, pile under the rug, the stored emotions become too much for us to handle. And oftentimes that's when people will have what they call mental breakdowns or, burnout. They burn out completely and they are absolutely stalled. There was a period of time in my life where I couldn't get out of bed for 2 months.
And once I started this, I had 2 years where I had difficulty getting out of bed.
I literally was in bed for 2 months, and as someone who has been clinically depressed, I knew I wasn't depressed, but I was at this space where I really couldn't process my emotions at all.
And it
So I
was,
was numb and stuck, right?
and it was using all your energy to contain all of those emotions and all the rest of it. Yes. And that's
And
exhausting.
it's absolutely exhausting. And as soon as you wake up, you're tired and you don't understand why. You don't have the energy. All I could do was get up and go to the bathroom and make my kids their food. And a lot of times I didn't even eat myself. I would just get up and do the bare minimum to survive for the day and then pack myself right back into bed. And so that's obviously one of the reasons why I started having these conversations, because often we don't recognize, first of all, we don't recognize when we are traumatized.
That's normal. It's life. That's okay.
Yep. And we just go on with our day. And so not knowing that we're traumatized then leads to not knowing that we are living from trauma responses, which means that we go on and we are living with the residual impact of our trauma, often chalking it up to being our personality, often chalking it up, oh, well, this is how I grew up. But in reality, it's because we haven't learned to process our emotions in a whole and complete way, which then keeps us stuck in fight, flight, fawn, or freeze, in
Correct.
this cycle that is endless until we learn how to deal with our emotions, which is so liberating, right? Like, one of the things that I've talked about before in this podcast is I homeschool my girls, and I've homeschooled them since they were 1 and 3. And in a formal capacity, like I created a whole classroom in my dining room for my kids. The very first thing that I taught my children before I taught them ABCs and 1, 2, 3s is to be able to express their emotions.
And it's
And
safe to do so. And the world is better when we do.
absolutely, because one of the things for me as I grew up, my parents didn't want anything to do with my emotions. My mom, yes. My father, absolutely not. So I learned very early on to pack away my emotions, which then had me a very angry child, because the only emotion that seemed remotely acceptable was me bursting into anger, because that was the only time that I was actually paid attention to, right?
That
Like, what is
exactly.
wrong with you now?
Why
Like, why are
are
you acting like that? But it was learned behavior, which as I got older was very volatile behavior. I used to describe myself as a volcano. Sometimes I smoke, sometimes I may spit a little bit of lava, but you better watch out, because if I erupt, if I erupt, nothing in my path is going to be safe. So for me, some of my biggest lessons were learning how to process my emotions in an honest, vulnerable way, which is why I was one of the first things I taught my children. And yes, it's kind of hard to hear when my 3-year-old is telling me she's angry, mad, and frustrated, but it makes me happy when she is able, even she's now 5, to tell me she's angry, mad, or frustrated, because it's something that we can work through, and I can teach her how to process her emotions without holding on to them, without packing them away, and without creating a bigger problem.
And I want to go back to what you said about, were you beating yourself up all the time and saying, I'm just lazy. Why can't I get out of bed and just do stuff? Because that's the other one. We beat ourselves up for our own trauma responses. And so does the rest of the world.
There isn't enough consideration and compassion. And I say that in probably in every episode, that there is not enough compassion in the world.
Right.
And we usually don't concern ourselves with issues that we can't relate to until they are knocking on our front door.
Correct. Yep. Yeah.
So tell me what it was like for you. Like, so you retrained yourself in psychotherapy, but what was your healing journey along the way? Because I often talk about, you know, I had spent time healing, but it wasn't until I started training as a coach and really understanding the science behind the tools that I had used that really liberated me. So I'd love to hear how your training helped you heal.
Okay, so inherently I knew, because I looked at doing psychology at uni or whatever, but I knew I wanted to come more from my heart. I do head. It's easy. You know, I can live up there and what have you. So I found a holistic place that taught a university degree of psychotherapy. And they made you do your own counseling. Like, you had to get 20 hours of counseling every year. It's part of your training. Universities don't do that. It's all about, this is how you work with other people. This is how you fix them. This was all doing it for ourselves. Like, we had to learn by doing it. And I remember the first year or so, they'd all go, you've got such big barriers. Why won't you let your barriers down? And I'm going, what barriers? And it wasn't until the third year where we were, So as part of that, I started to get an inkling when we looked at human development over the lifespan, because we continue to develop right through. And then I created my own basic human needs and the understanding from Peter Levine's work. So I don't know if you've come across his Waking the Tiger, which says stress is a physiological process that needs to complete. Now, that book was only published in 2003. I was doing my training in 2005. And it was just such a revelation for me, this whole body-based stress process. And we're the only animal on the planet that doesn't complete it. And since then, I've found out we're the only animal that gets PTSD. We're the only animal, and our humanized animals when we stop them. But all of this stuff that we've created as part of our survival mode. And so I was fascinated with it when I was studying it, and I know I was highly charged, me and another woman. Every time during the trauma module, when we were doing all this stuff, if she and I caught each other's eyes, we'd both burst into uncontrollable giggling, which is, again, I'm uncomfortable in my body, I'm uncomfortable with the topic, and it's that nervous laughter that we couldn't stop. And I look back now and go, wow, we were both so traumatized. And even then, we were only just starting to scratch the ice on it. And I did some more training in a couple of different modalities. One of them is called TRE, trauma releasing exercises. And to me, that was the missing link of how to downregulate your nervous system. And the other one is family and systemic constellations, which talks a lot about dealing with the trauma that's coming down through your family system, and you end up carrying it if you don't work on it. And it will go to your kids and your children's children and so on until someone's brave enough to stand up and look at it and work with it. So all of that came between 2005 and, say, 2010. I was doing lots of investigation, lots of study, and I was incorporating it then into my private practice. And by 2010, I started teaching my clients this stuff as well. And they all loved it because it makes such a difference. If you've got an awareness of what's happening in your body and you can see this and you can make a difference, it goes on. But I know I'm still working on all my stuff. And I know I will be for a long time. It's even I've been asked by an organization to do some work with them with training on stuff. And I remember I sat there for 2 days trying to put a proposal together until I realized The last time I did a proposal for a large organization was that day I was driving in.
9/11.
And my whole system's going, you don't want to do this. And it's like, damn, I thought I'd worked with all of that, but it's still there. So I'm working on that just at the moment so that it doesn't keep cutting me off at the knees. So it doesn't keep coming in. So again, you've got to have the awareness to be able to go, this isn't about this current thing. This is about something from the past. And I can work with that and I can change that.
Mm-hmm. That the awareness is key. When I talk about accident survival mode, I say it happens in three phases. Awareness is the first step, right? And I liken it, awareness to a lighthouse. It's traveling in the middle of the night, stormy night, oftentimes in survival mode, but in a storm, and all of a sudden this beacon of light comes down and shines in front of us. It allows us to see the path and forward, what's around us as well, and it also gives us the opportunity to change paths so that we don't end up shipwrecked, right? So awareness. The second is reprogramming. We have to challenge our beliefs. We have to challenge the narratives that we hear. We have to challenge our conditions and social expectations as well. Like, it's a whole gamut of things that we have to reprogram in order to move us beyond that state. And then the last piece is reinvention. I often hear in the trauma space, you can go back to who you were before the trauma. And I do not believe that at any point. And I always say it's very similar to having white paint and dropping black paint in it. It doesn't matter how light,
much more white you put in.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how light the color, that color is no longer white, it's gray. And when we introduce trauma into our lives, as we know, it changes us at a DNA level. And then on top of that, we have trauma that we're born into. For those that don't know, trauma can be passed on for 8 generations. And 8 generations is a very long time. Could be 200 years, right? That trauma can be passed until it's challenged. So there's so much that we need to do in order to shift beyond the person who holds the trauma to someone who is operating and thriving despite of the trauma. And they are two inherently different things, right? When we talk about thriving, and some people think that thriving in this space is a buzzword, but it isn't. Moving beyond trauma, getting off that cliff and getting back down to the beach is a huge achievement for someone who may have been in survival mode for 20 plus years, right?
And plus, when people finally, a lot of people don't actually know what their beach felt like. And the first couple of times they get down there, they go, what's wrong? Why am I feeling nothing? Why is it so boring?
Mm-hmm.
Because their nervous system's used to being on high charge all the time.
All the time. And I've spoken about this before. I was in an abusive relationships from the age of 14. In my late 20s, I met someone who was the healthiest relationship that I had ever been in my life.
Wow.
And I was bored shitless. Like, what is wrong with him? I don't know how to operate in this space. And yes. I walked away from it because I'm like, no, this can't be for me. I'm used to all of these feels. But my nervous system was telling me back then that I was safe. And I didn't know what safety felt like. So I went out and saw what I was used to. Right? And that happens not just in relationships, that happens maybe you've been in a stressful job for 30 years and then you go and get this very quote unquote boring job, but it's perfect for you because you're not living in stress. But we have been conditioned for stress from almost birth for most of us, right?
Thousands of years, Live with it, sweetheart. Yep.
So very interesting. This work It's so interesting. And it's so interesting because it's almost like we are just exposing the top of the iceberg, right? Like we only see what's above the water, but it's so much that goes into trauma recovery. There's so much that we have to unlearn and relearn as part of our healing process, which is why I often say healing isn't a destination. It's a long journey that at every point, you've just spoken about it. This is like 20 plus years later, beyond an
40 plus years later.
yes, well, I
Oh,
was
sorry, yeah, that one, yeah, 20
the
years.
9/11 one, right? 20 plus years later, for an experience that you did not experience personally, but
Oh.
look how it changed the way that you operated inherently.
Yes.
So this is why these conversations around trauma are so important, because we often dismiss how deeply rooted an event can create chaos in our lives.
Yes. And I also want to mention their post-trauma growth. So, like I said, if you can come down the cliff, you learn and you heal and you grow. And it's that growth. If you allow this and do this, you can't go back to what you were. That's someone who's set up to receive more trauma. But you can come back to someone who has that as memories, not active in your body anymore, but as a memory, and you go, I've learned from that. And my lesson for this one is work with that a bit more. And then you'll be able to do what you want to do. But it's this post-trauma growth, if once we've done some healing with it, we can't just, oh, push on and I'm going to just grow. No, that's still a
No.
trauma response.
Absolutely. And we have to peel back those layers. And they say we are an onion. Healing is an onion as well, right? And we have to
Oh,
peel back those layers to get to the core. And oftentimes it may surprise us what is driving us when we do get to that place of healing. So, Susie, this has been an amazing conversation. Tell us more about how we can connect with you online.
yeah. Okay, so I operate via Zoom for most things these days, like everyone. So I am available for one-on-one sessions. But more importantly, I've created a course that teaches people all about this to give them awareness, but also to give them the skills and the tools to actually deal with their trauma, to process what's been happening, to move forward. So in the first one, so the whole program is called From Surviving to Thriving, which is part of why your approach appealed to me. And the first course I've put up is From Stress to Bliss. So it's learning how, understanding that whole neuroscience of that stress cliff, and also learning what do you need to do to come back down that in a safe way so that you can eventually have more time on your beach than on the cliff face. As I say, there will be times and events where you'll still go up there, but you'll recognize it and you'll be able to come back down again. And we need to be able to do that for survival. We still need to survive. I've still got to pay the bills. I've still got to, do all the things. Yeah, so I've got a course and it's available online and you can access it through the website. It went live on the 1st of August and I'm taking it in groups of 20 people. So it's 10 modules of learning. And then each week we do a face-to-face via Zoom with the group. So I'm also building a community because I know healing happens best in relationship. And during COVID, I set up a group that we met every week, and they are still meeting and still benefiting from it. And so I know that having that community aspect to this training will make the big difference because people can ask questions and the whole thing. But so it gives them the information and all the skills and techniques to move. The next one is going to be called From Then to Now, and it's going to look a lot more at what are our basic human needs? What is the lifespan? How do we develop? Where do we, what, when do we get traumatized? And what, how do we know when we're being impacted by, I call them the team on the bench, because we didn't just get one wounded inner child, we've got hundreds of them. And when the situation mirrors when one of them was separated out, they come up and take over. And we do all those inappropriate behaviors, and there's the little adult voice in the back of our head going, do you think this is really appropriate? Meanwhile, my two-year-old's chucking a tantrum, go, yes, it is. And later I have to apologize to everyone who's all sitting there. We've all seen others do it and we've all done it. Ah, finished acting like a two-year-old now, are you? Or a 13-year-old or a whatever age group. We can spot it and we've all done it. So it leads to self-sabotage. It leads to what my first book was going to be called was High Achiever, Hollow Heart, which was how I spent my 23 years in IT. I could achieve well, but I always felt empty and like a fraud and all the rest of it. So the second module is much deeper than the first one. The first one, you don't have to do your emotions. You don't have to get really deep and dirty. But the second one, there will be a lot more emotive content in it.
Okay, well, how do we get access to this course? Give us your website.
The website, my website is fromsurvivingtothriving, the number 2.com.au. And you'll see that there's a, you can sign up on the waiting list. So I run a waiting list because I keep the numbers small so that I can do it. And then we start running the next one and the next one. But once we've got it full, so about 20 people per course.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that information is in the show notes for anyone who wants to get on that wait list and work through their trauma. So, Susie, before we close it out, give us one key takeaway for the audience to action.
So the one key thing I would suggest is start building that awareness and know it didn't start with you. Know that there is something you can do about it. And all you have to do is reach out to someone who can help. There's plenty of trauma therapists around the world, and just reach out to them and find the one that works for you and start doing it. Okay, that really, I promote the somatic approach because that neuroscience says it's held in the body. And if you can find that, as I say, my own course is exactly for this because I used to just help people one at a time. And I've gone, the world is too stressful at the moment. We all need to know this. So feel free.
Yep. Start building that awareness, guys. Susie, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. And audience, I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. So disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose, because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth, you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.